All right, good evening, everyone. This is Erin Backus of the Aha Moment, and we are on episode, 19? Irene, is that right?
Yeah, I've missed two of them, I think. So 19, maybe I missed only one. So
but you just
yeah.
missed one.
I don't know. The summer has just gone way over my head.
It has gone really flying by, and it's horrible. But I just wanted to say, like, we've had over, 400 downloads, Irene. And we've also have listeners from Australia and Taiwan and, of course, the U.S. And before we've had them in Canada before, right, as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Recently, just a few more. So that's really cool. So thank you very much for listeners for joining us tonight and every other episode. All right. Well, we have a wonderful guest with us tonight, all the way from the West Coast. It's Trish Hildinger. And we are very thankful to have her. Trish has a BS in horticulture and is registered horticultural therapist. In 2018, she started Horticultural Therapy Santa Cruz
and founded the current California Horticultural Therapy Network. This organization's goal
is to catalyze collaborations and advance the profession of horticultural therapy in California. Today, Trish works with a variety of populations, including adults who have strokes and who have memory loss and dementia. So thank you very much for coming on tonight, Trish. I know it's a different time zone, but we are very happy to have you here.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So Trish, what is your HT business called? You're an independent contractor, I understand.
I am. Yeah. Horticultural Therapy Santa Cruz, or HTST.
Oh, okay. That's the actual business. Okay. Super. Yeah. Do you find that you are able to support yourself with this kind of a business where you live? And has it been?
No, not completely. No, okay. No. And actually, since COVID, very minimally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not a line item for budgets quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe one day.
Before we get into your aha moment, what inspired you to want to do it as an independent contractor rather than working for, say, a rehabilitation center or another facility to incorporate HT into?
Well, in my area, you know, most people had never heard of horticultural therapy, much less a horticultural therapist. So really it was up to me to drum up the business in any way, no matter where I went, and so I just decided to do it as a contractor. I'd shadowed a couple of people that I met in the San Francisco Bay Area, and one of them worked at an assisted living residence, and I really liked that population, and so I went for that. The only place that I knew of at that time was in Cordilleras, a mental health center. Kind of in, you know, living residence. And there was one of those opening in Santa Cruz, but I really like the elder population. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And have you done any of your own like marketing or promotion for yourself of that business in the sense of flyers aside from any business cards? Just to give people a sense of what it is to what it takes to kind of become that contractor and to get yourself out there to build awareness.
Yeah. So yeah, I made, and actually I did this as part of HTI as one of my last assignments, but I made a brochure, a color kind of semi-glossy fold, three-fold brochure.
I remember that activity.
So I made that, and I just cold called after doing as much homework as I could online and kind of scoping things out and looking at different memory care and assisted living places. And then I cold called by going in person, not on the phone.
Right.
So, yeah. To
try and sell myself. You did a one-on-one introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Much for me, much better than the phone. I think I come across
definitely
much more interesting in person.
Yeah. Well, and it's less of a sales pitch than it is more of a holistic approach too. You know what I mean? When you're in person, it just, that has a deeper connection, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And having some samples and some activities already in your head and your mind. Or I didn't bring documentation with me or anything, but I had that if needed, you know. Yeah.
So where you are now, and you had some building blocks along the way, we are, as the title of this podcast is The Aha Moment, was there perhaps more, or were there perhaps more than one aha moment for you? And if so, we'd love to hear about that. But was there one in particular that really just like the light went on for you?
Well, I did have an aha moment, but it wasn't exactly with horticultural therapy, though in retrospect, I feel like it was, even though that's not what the job was called. So I had my degree from Cal Poly in what was then called the ornamental horticulture. And I do remember a woman, I didn't know her well, but a fellow student who talked about horticultural therapy and something with Kansas State University. Mm-hmm. And somewhere it logged in my brain somewhere deep. And then that was it. And I went on with my degree and whatnot. And didn't really think of it a whole lot again. And a few years later, found myself in Santa Cruz. I was working on a farm and I was bicycle commuting and I kept passing by an elementary school. And it was really obvious over a couple weeks' time that they were building a garden. And that was my aha moment. I was just like, oh, I need to find out what's going on there because I need a piece of that. I need to know what's going on there. And so
you're referring to the community aspect and connecting it with children at a young age. Is that what?
Yeah. Yeah. It was an elementary school and there were raised beds going in and I just got super jazzed about that. And so I called the school and I said, what gives? I'm biking by here. How is this happening? What are you doing? And I wanted to volunteer. And the woman very kindly on the phone said, I would love you to volunteer. And I feel I need to tell you, there's a position open to teach gardening to kids at a different elementary school. Oh my God. And I said, okay, thanks. Bye. And I applied for that job and took it. And then I ended up teaching gardening in elementary schools and to adults a little bit later on for the next 25 years.
This was a while ago. Okay.
Yeah. So I did that and it wasn't called horticultural therapy. It was called an aid, instructional aid. Mm-hmm. But really in hindsight, it definitely was therapeutic horticulture.
Even that, teaching horticulture, teaching gardening to children as much as to adults, was that through the school or was that through the cooperative extension of California, like of a section of California?
I was an instructional aide with the elementary school.
That is so rare. That's so amazing that you have that opportunity.
Yeah, it's in Santa Cruz, there's a lot of, well, in the city, all of our elementary schools have gardens now. But Life Lab, which is a nonprofit organization, began in Santa Cruz back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what got school gardens going, even though they didn't provide, you know, the instructor, but they had curriculum.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And it was started at a school in Santa Cruz in the unincorporated area. So it was a familiar concept, but it was funded by either, you know, the school or the like the PTA or the home and school club, mm-hmm. or depending on the school.
So while you were doing the instruction for those, you know, youth and sometimes maybe the parents of the youth or the adults, and now that you are working with people who are in the advanced age in their lives, just going back to that instruction with the youth, I'm just thinking about what there were some activities or some tools of which you really gravitated towards that also kind of lent to a horticultural therapy approach to it as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of the activities that you do with children, you can do them with anybody. It's just a matter of tailoring it to the population. Mm-hmm. Right. So with children's activities, you break things down into tiny little pieces. And actually you do that a lot with people who have dementia or with mm-hmm. memory care. You really absolutely break it down And with little kids, like with 2 and 3 year olds, it's all sensory. Right. So when I work with preschoolers, you know, mentally it's not the same at all, but sensory wise, it's a similar experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so would you get into, like, give us some examples of what it was like to start those days with the kids on, you know, to get them excited about gardening first off?
Well, the garden generally, for most kids up until at least age 8 or 9, like, they're excited to be there anyway. They're out of the classroom, they're outside. There was a few do's and don'ts.
Yeah, I was going to say, they could also be free roaming at that point, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So setting up some boundaries, you know, physical and geographical, if you will, depending on the size of the garden. I did work in the original Life Lab garden, which was about 2.5 acres. So I definitely had to set up some physical boundaries sometimes. But really letting them explore and have questions and be curious, mm-hmm. for kids. I found that to be the biggest thing. And I did all the work with them. I didn't do it top down. Mm-hmm. So if we were digging in bed, I was digging in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
If we were, you know, weeding, then I was weeding. If we were, you know, in the pond looking at things, then I was down on my belly looking at things.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really good point that you just made, is the experience that's being shared and not feeling like you're this supervisor telling them what to do, but the experience is a together moment. It's for, like, learning together experience, you know. And
yeah,
and I think
there's no wrong in the garden,
right?
I mean, because I'm not a farmer, we weren't farming. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried that once, providing food for the kitchen, and that didn't last too long. But, you know, so with that, you know, if the carrots don't grow, it's like, well, okay, how come the carrots didn't grow? And let's figure it out and let's do it. But it's not like you have to space them 2 inches apart and it has to be this way. It wasn't. I'm very much a laissez-faire gardener.
Did you have the kids from, like, say, June, or I guess during the school season, right? Only during the school season. So what was that like? What were some of the crops that were really exceptional to the kids that were like, oh my God, that's so amazing. We've seen it from beginning to this.
Anything that's a root. I mean, carrots were fantastic. Potatoes, anything that you don't see and then you pull it out of the ground.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty great.
It's probably much different to garden in California where you are than like we're used to in the Northeast, right? With, like, veggies and stuff, like timing it during the year, right?
Yeah. So we can grow almost year round on the coast in California where I am. So the summer crops, you know, are still the heat loving ones, just like they are where you are. Mm-hmm. But we would grow things like winter squash or popcorn or shelling beans, mm-hmm. things that you can just grow all summer and then you can harvest it in the fall. And then the rest of the year, we can grow, you know, anything that's green, leafy green, broccoli, you know, that stuff, which doesn't sound maybe as exciting, but if the kids get to eat it, right, they're all over it. And ranch dressing makes everything go down better.
So from that position of teaching to that age group, where did you decide that you wanted to commit to horticultural therapy?
In 2015, I was looking for a little bit of a change, but still love horticulture. And I had that logged in part of my brain from that woman back in college surfaced around then, mm-hmm. for various reasons. And I thought, oh yeah, there was this thing. I need to find out about it. And so I did. And actually it was a kind of circuitous. I was looking it up for a friend's daughter. And I thought, oh yeah, there's horticultural therapy. And I started reading. I thought, oh, I need to do this. So I went back to school I looked up the, you know, what I needed to do. And I signed up for HTI to get the certificate. and went back to the community college to get a few of the courses that I was missing from my undergrad.
So who did you do your, who did your supervision of your registration process?
Pam Catlin in Arizona in Prescott, who was on your podcast not too long ago. Yeah.
So did you go to Arizona or did she come to visit you?
I went to Arizona.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, there was nobody supervising in California. There was one person, Suzanne Riddell, and she was booked. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I found Pam taught at HTI, so I met her in the last class, and she worked with a fairly diverse population. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to work with somebody who was doing it and like in real time. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to invent it on my own, though I knew I could do that. I really wanted to be underneath somebody, like literally. And so I asked her if she would work with me and be willing to kind of do a hybrid. So I did half of my internship in Arizona and I did half of it in California. And then she did come to California.
Oh, wow. That's very exceptional. That's wonderful. Yeah. That you were able to work that out.
It was great. I'm glad I did that.
And just to remind listeners, to become a registered Hort therapist, you have to be certified, you have to be supervised by another registered horticultural therapist and complete 480 hours of service work. So that's inclusive of doing programming as much as doing research and a lot of journaling, et cetera. So did you find that it was challenging to fulfill those hours, et cetera, you know, between the two?
No, it was time. So she worked with me, you know, very, very much so. So when I had 6 weeks in Arizona, I worked full time, mm-hmm. just hit the ground running. Just, you know, I rented a room and a place and I just worked the whole time.
Cool. And is that where you started to get better acquainted with the population that was in the more advanced age group?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And kind of not simultaneously, but almost, that was when I did my cold calls, if you will, here in California. A friend of mine told me to approach, because I didn't know how to approach businesses and say, how do I sell myself? And she said, you're a student right now and people love students, no matter the age that you are. She said, go in, say you're a student, you're working towards your HTR, tell them what you're doing and tell them you need X amount of hours. And when those hours are up, you'd like to sit down with them because then you want to get paid if they want to hire you afterwards. So she goes, set it up ahead of time so that they don't think you're going to be a volunteer for the rest of forever.
Right.
And they're not surprised that after, you know, 6 months or whatever it is that you want to be paid to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is my goal. And when I get to this goal, you know, right. I want you to consider hiring me. And right. So they did. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so how many groups have you worked with? And then perhaps are any of those on a recurring basis? I mean, before COVID and maybe a little bit after COVID, et cetera.
Pre-COVID, I worked at two different assisted living residences and I was at both of them twice a month mm-hmm. for 1 hour long sessions. Mm-hmm.
And were you able to create the dynamic, like the format that is, you know, really customize it based off of what you as the practitioner wanted to get out of it as much as giving it to those individuals?
Yeah. Yeah. I could format it. I was under activities. So I didn't, ideally I think it'd be nice to be under the health department, but that wasn't the reality. So I was underneath activities. So I was hired by the activities director.
Right.
But I did do documentation and I did give it to them and they really liked it. I think actually that was a fairly big selling point for them. Even though they didn't use it for health purposes, I think they used it more for speaking with the families.
Mm-hmm.
actually, but that was, I think, yeah, I think that was pretty key. And if any of you listen to Pam speak, she speaks very highly of documentation, and I have to agree that it's really good, even if you're not sure what you're going to use it for.
Right. It's a tool for long-term purposes, for sure. So, we have this customary question that we like to ask all of our guests, and Aaron is the person with this key question. So I'm going to throw the baton over to Aaron.
Oh, thank you. At least I'm not flaming this time.
Well, it's a theoretical baton.
don't know. You throw pretty far. So I mean, Trish, you've worked with kids and the older population. What is that one go-to plant that you really like using in groups?
One go-to plant. Oh, as a horticulturist, I could never pick one plant, Erin. What kind of question is that?
It is a really evil question,
I know.
but
I figured it was by the way you were introducing it. I would say anything that's easily propagated and not poisonous.
So you're giving aspects of what could be a good plant.
Yes.
You're not narrowing down on what that
She's
one
like, I'm not doing
is.
No, I'm not going there.
You're not
In fact,
putting me in that.
if you ask my students, because I didn't tell you another job I have, but if you ask my students, they would probably say that maybe not every week, but at least a couple of times a month, I'll say, "Oh, this is one of my favorite plants." So that's an impossible question.
It's like, what color do you like right now? And then maybe it changes another time.
Right, whatever's in season.
Well, I think that's an important factor, though, is to for a practitioner to feel like they have their qualifications, like you just said, of what you think is going to be, the plants that you would want to use. Obviously toxic and not harmful in any way whatsoever.
Because I work, I also work at a stroke and disability learning center. And I do that once a week. I have a class, and that's located at our community college. And we're back in person, yay, this fall. But what I like to do before sessions is I cruise my yard and I get inspiration from there about what I'm going to bring to class. So it's very seasonal.
What zone are you?
USDA, we have sunset zones out here. I know that better. I'm 17 sunset. I think it's, I don't know, it's 10, 9? I don't know.
I think you're more like 9-10 because
Yeah.
you guys can grow
That's
avocados and artichokes and
Yep.
those are nines.
Yeah.
One thing I know this normally we wrap up from that question, but I gotta ask this one question though, is something relating to choice, Trish, and the power of choice in what we do, trying to really encourage our participants. I say ours, meaning any of us in hort therapy, is the enabling and encouragement of choice. And so when you present the opportunity of choice, what are some of the, can you give me an example of those with strokes who've experienced strokes? Because I've never worked with that population, and I would be interested in knowing like how engaged or how it must be dependent on the individual, but do you find that the power of choice is very meaningful to them or not at all?
Well, at the Stroke and Disability Learning Center, the class that I teach is an elective. So it's an educational model. They sign up for classes, but there are core classes like mobility and speech and counseling. And then I have what's called one of the heart classes, which in maybe layperson's terms is an elective. So they've already chosen to be in the class.
Ah, right.
So it's a little bit moot with that. Right. And assisted living and memory care residences, that was choice, but perhaps less so.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was a different story, but I did try and bring in a variety of plants. Mm-hmm. So they have a choice with plants. And if there was any add-ons, in terms of ribbon or something like that, mm-hmm. I always brought in a plethora of colors, or sometimes just two, depending on right. if which was more appropriate, but always try and have them have the choice right. of having it, not having it, pink, blue, what, you know.
Yeah. What they gravitate towards. It may not be a conscious thing, but it's something that they go towards.
Right. And always a choice of plants or seeds.
Right.
Containers. All of that. Yeah.
Usually my population is too. What can I hold on to easily? Oh, lettuce seed? No way. I can't handle lettuce seed.
Like beans.
Yeah, exactly. It's been wonderful talking to you, Trish. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I look forward to listening to more podcasts.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and have a good night. We will see you next time.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.